Yesterday. So we discussed a particular form of wave function in which the pseudospin points in the direction of the momentum. And this is a consequence of the Dirac model. And one consequence that was actually worked out a long time ago in 1929, I think, by Oscar Klein was called the Klein paradox. And the Klein paradox has to do with tunneling. And let me draw it here. Can you all see this board? A potential barrier. So usually, we're used to think of wave functions somewhere on this side, and maybe coming in a wave packet or a wave function. And then we have some potential barrier. So let's call that height V, the height of the potential barrier, maybe V naught. And we're used to thinking that if I have a plane wave thing coming in, if the height of the barrier is higher than the energy of this plane wave, usually we think that tunneling is suppressed. So it's not like in classical mechanics that you cannot go through a wall. Waves can go through a wall, but they might decay in amplitude. And if the barrier is too big, then the decay is going to be really fast, and we're going to end up with not much on the other side. And sometimes there is some more probability to find our particle or whatever the wave function is describing on the other side. This is for let's say V more than the energy. Of course, when V is less than the energy, I guess it's more like a well. But you would just expect to have some plane wave. It will still go inside. It might change a little bit in the barrier, change its wave length, but outside it will still have a pretty large amplitude. So that's for E, let's say, less than V naught. However, so this is, let's say, P squared over 2m kind of system, particle. In Dirac kind of physics, our intuition fails, basically. What happens is, even if the energy is larger, even if the potential is larger than E, and especially in cases when it's very large, we have an incoming wave, it can still propagate inside the barrier and outside the barrier. And in fact, if we had a massive Dirac equation, which would be relevant to us later on in the course, the higher the potential is, even if it's much higher than the rest mass of our Dirac particle, the probability to tunnel through the barrier gets higher. And in fact, if you have a Dirac massless fermion, like we have in graphene, if the potential is higher than the energy, it becomes transparent. So our particle can tunnel through without even noticing anything. And that was called the Klein paradox, but actually it's not really a paradox. It's only an apparent paradox. And as we'll see in a moment, it's a direct consequence of the Dirac equation. Basically, you can think of it in the following way. In the Dirac equation, even if you start here and you have some state, you can, let me draw it like that. Let's say I have a positive energy, some E here. And now I add a potential energy, so it's like shifting everything down V naught. Shifting everything up a little bit. So it's like depleting the lower cone. But I still have propagating states here. So unlike in a parabolic system, if you go below the band, you usually only get decaying states because there are no propagating states. Here there are propagating states, but they have the opposite chirality. And that was written in the context of electron and positron. But for us, in condensed matter, actually an antiparticle is something that we're used to all the time. When we have bands, we can either add electrons to an empty band, or we can deplete a full band. And this is exactly what we have in half-filled graphene. We either have, we can have a full band when we're at half-filling, all of this lower Dirac cone is full, and all of this upper Dirac cone is empty. So let's just do that relatively quickly. What we do is what you did in undergraduate, I think a couple of years ago, is just solve the Schrödinger equation in all three parts and then match them together. So as I told you before, okay, so first of all, we have to write our Schrödinger equation, which is now our Dirac equation. So do you know how to write it in real space? So remember, we had kx, let's say kx plus iky, and kx minus iky. Now I want to write it in real space. So what I have is minus ih dx, ddx, basically, plus dy, and minus ih dx minus dy. Let me just see that I have right signs. Yeah, exactly. So now, to solve this equation, all I need to do is pick a wave function that will satisfy this equation. And is there a question?
Why does the y doesn't have an h bar?
And let's set an h bar to 1 from now on. So basically, we already know, without this perturbation, we already know that our wave function looks like e to the I phi k times e to the I kx x plus I ky y. So we know this is the wave function. And if we have plus or minus the energy, then there would be plus or minus here. So the plus would be for the upper cone, the minus will be for the lower cone, and this is just a convention. You know we have two types of cones in graphene, but let's just focus on one. And phi k is the argument of k. Right. But now, what I want to do is add this potential and basically break the translational invariance. But I still have some conservation. So let's assume that our potential barrier is only in the x direction. So there's still translational invariance in the y direction. So let's say that if this is my real space, x and y, then the potential changes along these lines. There's V is 0, V is V naught, and V is 0 again. And this is my barrier. Okay, but along the y direction, there would be no change. So I can still use ky. It's still a good quantum number, and it will still be conserved. So for all of my wave functions in all of these three places, I will still have the same ky. Now, what happens in kx? There's no translational invariance anymore. So what do I know about kx? So let me ask you. Let's say that I can prepare my wave function. Let's say I prepare a wave packet that is centered around a particular kx. What will happen in other places in my... So I want to start here with some beam coming at an angle, and it has kx and ky. Okay, so that's my initial wave function. So can someone tell me what will happen once I get to that barrier? So I'll just give you a little hint. We can think of scattering, but what kind of states can I scatter into? Yeah, left moving and right moving. So if I have energy, I have kx and ky. My energy is basically kx squared plus ky squared, right? It's just k. And I chose something that is moving in the positive x direction. But as Anton is saying, it can also move in the negative x direction. Can it move with any given momentum? Let's look in this region. The energy is still E, okay? Ky will be ky, right? We know it's conserved. So even if I want an incoming and an outgoing state, the outgoing state will still have to have the same ky. So I'll have here, let's say, region number one. Let's call that minus A and A. Region number one is x less than minus A. I'll have e to the I kx plus I ky, and 1 and e to the I phi k. Let's say kx and ky. And I'm taking the positive energy here, okay? It's just a choice. I can take whatever I want. But I need to add a reflecting beam. So the reflecting beam, so help me out here. I put this amplitude, relative amplitude, R. What else do I know about this reflecting beam? Has the same energy. Has the same ky momentum. What about kx? It's just minus kx. Why can't it be any other momentum?
We can conserve energy.
Right, because I'm conserving the energy. Otherwise, I should have considered any type of momentum. But since I have energy conservation, ky stays fixed, then kx can only be minus kx or kx that I started with. So minus kx. Now e to the I phi, and that's a delicate issue, phi of minus kx and ky. So what we need to remember is that we started at the Dirac cone, let's say somewhere here, and we're reflecting in the x direction to this point, so this chirality angle also changes. And in fact, phi of whatever k goes to phi of, let's not do it now. Now I want to take the other region, let's say 3, where x is larger than a. Whatever is left there, I call the transmitted beam, and I give it a coefficient t, because I don't know what it is. This is what we want to calculate, how much is transmitted. And I do know again that I have ikx plus ikyy. So why is that? Do I need to consider also a reflected beam here? No, that's the only direction I'm interested in, right? What comes out? If I didn't start with anything coming from the far right. If I did, it's a new problem. But I'm just thinking of transmitting something and measuring it on the other side. So only that, and again, e, I, I, k, x, k, y. The energy is the same, so I know that kx and ky are the same, and the direction is the same, so I know that kx doesn't get a sign. That's simple. And now go to 3. X is between minus a and a. Now, what do I need to consider? Which kind of waves do I need to consider here?
Traveling in both directions,
that's true. So let's give it two coefficients, alpha and beta. Do I take kx and minus kx like before? Is it the same kx as before?
No.
Is it the same ky as before?
Yeah,
it should be the same ky, but it's not the same kx. And why is it not the same kx?
Because the energy is smaller, or the kinetic energy is smaller.
Exactly. That's why you said that. Yeah. So that's very right. The kinetic energy is now different. So this Qx here should satisfy Qx squared plus Qy squared, plus Ky squared is now equal to not the energy, but the energy minus V naught. Okay? So alpha and beta are just the coefficients of the two beams that I can include here, minus qx and ky. Okay, yeah.
I don't understand, like you said that you can't backscatter to the opposite.
I have two scattering centers that can scatter me to the opposite. So if I send my initial beam from here, it will go outside here. And whatever I have here can also scatter here. But if something leaks outside, there's no other barrier to send it back. It's, you can think of it as the setup of my measurement. If I just wanted to solve the whole quantum problem, I should have taken, you know, the mirror reflection of the same thing. But then I would just still be able to maybe separate components or something like that. Okay, so now what is left to be done is matching. But I just want to do it quickly, so I will not match the whole thing. I will specialize to some cases. So the first assumption I make is that ky is zero. So I'm thinking of sending my beam exactly perpendicular to my barrier. You can do it for any ky, and there's a paper by Katz Nelson that does it for any. Maybe I'll write it. They actually do it both for single layer and bilayer graphene. Okay, maybe one thing I didn't mention in the beginning that I should have, that if you wanted to do this experiment with electrons, you would have a very hard time because the rest mass, that energy that you need to overcome to actually see the barrier becoming transparent is mc squared. And if you want to do a barrier that is sharp, which you need to do for everything that we're doing to be true, you will need something like 10 to the 16th volts per centimeter. So that's huge fields that makes this experiment not accessible. On the other hand, we're going to talk in a second about how this experiment can be realized in other systems like graphene. Okay, so the one thing I'm doing is choosing ky to be 0, and I'm interested in the case of E minus V naught smaller than 0. So if I want to describe a negative energy state, is that right, the way I wrote it? You remember we had this, where the sign had to be the sign of the energy. So we're actually going to the lower cone. So there's a minus sign here, which is important. And let's get, and these assumptions actually give us one more thing. If I have my phi of basically kx and 0, and now I take phi to be minus kx and 0, so I'm reflecting, and actually that's true for any ky, then this angle is equal to phi of kx and ky, actually, plus pi. Why is that? I'm looking at the argument, and I'm reflecting. There's a minus sign here. So look at the argument. Say I have that vector k. This is my angle phi. Now I'm reflecting about the x direction. So this angle now is pi. This angle now, sorry, is pi minus phi. This is phi. Okay? So this means that even though here actually phi of something on the x direction is just 0, I'm getting a minus sign. Okay? So now this means that I can forget about this phase. I can forget about this phase, but add a minus sign, okay, because I reflected. This phase is fine, but I can also forget about it. It's 1. I have a minus here, and I leave the minus. But the minus here, it's added up, and I get a plus 1 here. Okay. So what's next? Remember what we do to finish this up? Just match boundary conditions. Okay. So we'll do it quickly and then move on. So at minus A, we have 1, 1, right, plus R, 1 minus 1, times, e to the minus ika plus 1 minus 1 e to the ika. Okay? So just this factor needs to be equal to t times e to the minus ikxa. So let's just call it k because we don't have k in the y direction. 1, 1. And at A, we will have t e to the ika from this, and it's equal to alpha e to the iqa 1 minus 1 plus beta e to the I to the minus IQA 1, 1. Okay, so let me just skip to the end and basically just tell you that after you do that, you'll find that in this direction, t squared, which is the transmission coefficient, is 1. And therefore, there is no reflection. R squared is 0. And this just comes out of solving these equations. You have everything here you need to solve. You know Q. You can assume any K you want, and any energy you want. And then you just need to find T and R, which just come out of these equations. So, but what kind of an experiment can I actually do? I can't really prepare a wave packet and send it. There are two things that one can do. Yeah.
First, are you matching the leftmost to the rightmost zone?
No, I'm matching this one and this one. They need. Sorry. Thank you very much. Yeah. So I made a mess here. So I should not match this. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, so what I should do is basically match these two. So this, so what I did now, I just replaced the signs of A and I put an equal sign. Yeah, thank you very much for that. So I have one of these for minus A, and I'll have a similar equation to plus A, for plus A. And then you'll have enough to find that. Yeah, so basically, I cannot do this experiment at high energy, and I cannot prepare a wave function. But what can I do? So what I can do is, first of all, see that there are implications even for regular transport in graphene. So, for example, you remember I showed you yesterday the electron and hole puddles. So one can look at it as a similar situation. It's like adding a chemical potential that is changing in my space. So let's imagine that I actually have this. I can basically say that my chemical potential is moving the Fermi energy. And if I think about transport, the important excitations are around the Fermi energy. So if I put the Fermi energy somewhere in the hole pocket, in the electron pocket, I have excitations here. When I deplete the cone, I create holes, and my Fermi energy is somewhere here. So then I have a similar situation. And actually, this kind of physics has implications about what the system with this order is going to do. So for example, in two dimensions, there is Anderson localization. So Anderson showed that if you have a dirty system, you will find that all of the states are actually localized by the disorder. And they exponentially decay away from disorder sites. And you basically get a mobility gap. You see that in transport. In graphene, this will not happen. Because if I think semi-classically, going with my wave function into a region where all of a sudden the chemical potential changes, my wave function will not be localized by it. It might not be able to just continue straight. It might scatter to some directions, but it won't be localized because, as we saw, at least in one direction, which is perpendicular to, let's say, the gradient of that chemical potential, there would be transmission. So we expect no Anderson localization in graphene. That's one thing. Another thing that's been suggested, if you really want to test this apparent paradox and see that you get transparent barriers, is you can actually build a waveguide and do some quantum optics experiments. So you can build a waveguide that is sort of like graphene. It's an optical lattice with honeycomb holes in it. But when we do optical quantum optics, we basically think of one direction as proportional to the time. That would be the propagation direction. So imagine a long waveguide. Let's say it's in the z direction. And perpendicular to it, you just etch holes that are waveguides that are in a honeycomb setup. And actually, you can play with that nowadays in labs. You can make many things, and you can prepare a wave function, because your wave function is actually a wave of light. So that can actually happen, and some suggestions have been made. But let me go on. Are there any questions about this? Yeah.
Is there any way you can assume that KY doesn't change inside the barrier? It is between minus N and A. Like, so KX goes to QX, but KY remains. I don't know. Like, how does the light know that the barrier is an angle, or how does the particle?
If you look at it this way, I think it's more clear. If I look at my Hamiltonian with this barrier, I still have translational invariance in the y direction. So I could partially Fourier transform and see that my Hamiltonian is diagonal in ky. So it's a good quantum number. So I can write my Hamiltonian as a sum of Hamiltonians as ky parameters. And my Hamiltonian tells me that it does not take you from one state to another. All of these states are there, but the Hamiltonian does not mix them because it's invariant. But it does mix the KX state because it breaks that symmetry. Okay, so if there are no more questions, then we can go on to another topic, which I hope I'm going to cover all today. And this is the topic of edge states, which is, in my opinion, very neat, and also maybe a good preparation for quantum Hall effect.
I have a question. Isn't Klein paradox more than just these? Because Klein paradox is more about the transmission frequency than what? The reflection.
Transmission what?
You get a transmission that's greater than one, and the reflection is
I don't know if you can actually have that transmission is greater than one.
Yeah, you said when you do like the paradox, we get, because you actually see the subchargeable problem.
Oh, charge pumping, you mean?
Yeah, so you get like, it's what it says that they're very, you get creation of parasitic. Particle, so that you get more particles,
yeah.
And you get them particles.
Yeah, so I see, but I think we need to add a bit more than that. You just create kind of more excitations out of the vacuum. I think, I haven't really seen that done, but I can imagine that that will happen. But I think you need to add another ingredient, not just send a wave packet and you'll see an amplification. I think you have to add something.
No, I think
but
that
if
you just solve the equation, you get that.
Okay, I'll look into it.
This is not exactly like Plato's paradox.
Okay, I'll look into it. Maybe it's not exactly. Maybe there is some way to just excite them without you. Okay, or maybe you need a certain barrier to do that.
Yeah, you need the barrier.
Yeah, but maybe not that kind of barrier. Because from what I saw in the original Klein paradox, it was just perfect reflection. But maybe there were subsequent. I'll look into that, and we can talk about it. Okay, so I want to break translational symmetry again, and I want to say now that I have a semi-infinite sample. So in reality, we never have infinite samples. We always have edges. And I just want to ask what happens near one edge. So now I'm thinking of a situation where, let's say, in the x direction, everything is translationally invariant. And in the y direction, so this is x equals, this is y equals 0. In the y direction, I have a sample here and no sample here. And I just want to ask what happens. And the answer to this question is that what happens is that you get edge modes. And we're going to attack edge modes from different angles. But today, I only want to take the graphene Hamiltonian, the tight binding Hamiltonian, and show you that even in this simple tight binding Hamiltonian, you get edge modes. Before that, just a word about edge modes. When you take any system, any continuum system, you sometimes get some states that live on the edge. Usually, they're not very significant because they might hybridize with continuum. So let me say that in another way. We saw before when we were looking at that, we were expecting a decaying state. So this, if this barrier went on forever, I would maybe call that an edge mode. Because when we solve the Schrödinger equation, we're looking for solutions that are physical. So if we have a wave, we have some, let's say that instead of, e to the ikx, I can say that actually any wave function that has this form will still solve my differential equation. So you can always look at the Schrödinger equation as a differential equation, or if it's discretized, then it's a difference equation. Nobody tells me that I have to have something that's only a phase. I can have any complex number as long as it's just to the power of x. And you know that when you're solving differential equations. But we usually want, if we have an infinite system, we want our wave function to not go to infinity when our coordinates go to infinity, right? So basically, we're asking if I have z to the x, I want it to be 1. Because otherwise, when x gets large, my wave function will get large. So I want z to be 1. And these are our plane waves. As soon as I add a barrier, I can allow for z to be something else. For example, a function like e to the minus some alpha x is fine because it goes to 0 at infinity and it's finite on my barrier. My barrier would be like that. So let's say it's y here. It's fine. If I had the finite strip, I could also add e to the alpha y because I don't go to infinity. So actually, by adding a barrier, we're adding more solutions that we didn't have before because they were not physical by our boundary conditions at infinity. So now, instead of boundary conditions on y at plus and minus infinity, we have boundary conditions at y equals 0 and y goes to infinity. And in x, of course, we still left it infinite. So at x, also plus and minus infinity. So now, let me just look at graphene. So, graphene, I had psi I dagger Tij, dagger psi j, and I summed over ij. And now what I want to do is solve this problem like we did before, but on a semi-infinite sample. So let me say that in the x direction, there's still translational invariance. So what I want to do is partially Fourier transform. So let's just call it, let's just say instead of ij, I go over all I and T of delta. And then I have I plus delta. And I have to go over three nearest neighbors. Okay? So let's just look at the A sublattice. And what I want to find is basically the following. So now I want to partially Fourier transform. So I have kx and iy, okay? So here I had a two-dimensional vector. And of course, I'm going over all deltas. And I have kx, iy. And here I'll have t, k, and let's just call it k, okay? Tk of delta in the y direction. And it's complex conjugate here, psi kx iy plus delta y. So the hopping here is all in the y direction. So to describe the hopping here, so my Tk would be, so let's say Tk and delta, and I sum over delta, y. Let me just call that R dagger. So R dagger would be something that takes me from one line to the other. Okay, actually I want to go back a little bit and just look at the geometry. So these edge states actually only happen in the zigzag geometry, and this is where the edge is along this way. And what I want to say is that if I Fourier transform on the x direction, I basically divide my system to lines. And I want to enumerate them. And I want to say that this is y equals 1, the first line. This would be y equals 2, second line, and so on. And this operator R dagger will basically act on the y coordinate and will just take me from one line to the next. So I started here, it takes me to the next line. And the fact that I put it in the off-diagonal piece of the matrix will take care of the fact that I'm going to the other line on the other sublattice. Okay? So this is for this. Now, to go to this atom, basically, I don't have to have any operator. I stay within the same unit cell that I had before. But I have a phase. I have a phase which is e to the I kx over 2a. Okay? And I also have the other one, which is e to the I minus I kx a over 2. So basically, my operator here is R dagger plus 2 cosine kx over 2. So is that clear what I'm doing? I just partially Fourier transformed. So I left my y coordinate and I'm representing operations going up and down the y coordinate with this operator R. So if I have n atoms, n lines, I will have n by n, this would be an n by n matrix. And in our case, n is infinity, but I can still write an operator. And since I Fourier transform, whenever I make a step in the x direction, I have to give it a phase. So you can rigorously do it very carefully if you just, you know, take, say, of x and y, and take it to sum over k, 1 over n, e to the I dot x, and then psi of y, some psi of y. And the y is just discrete. It could be plus or minus. So basically, r dagger psi of y is psi y plus 1. This is how I define the operator. Okay, and then my Hamiltonian, my h of k, which now is in the x direction, is actually going to be psi k dagger r dagger plus 2 cos kx over 2. And here I need the complex conjugate, so I don't have to do this again, but complex conjugate of going up one line would be to go down one line. So r plus 2 cos kx over 2. So now when I wrote this now, I imagine that psi k is a vector in the y coordinate, but has a label k. So I can separate to different k's. And now all I need to do is basically find the wave function that is localized. So I told you that we were expecting this kind of solution. But I do not expect it to happen in any energy. What happens in any energy, once you introduce a boundary, since we have bulk states, these plane waves, they can rearrange to accommodate the edge, like they do usually with standing waves. You find cosines and sines, so that can happen. You can also have this kind of state, but it would be hybridized with a continuum, so I cannot see it in any probe. But if I look at zero energy, where the density of state is zero, I expect to see something. And this something is what I'm looking for. But basically, basically I'm looking only at edge states at energy equals zero. And what I want to do now is just solve this. So I told you yesterday it looks like a supersymmetric quantum mechanics. Then we squared it before to get the spectrum. Another beautiful thing is that I know already what kind of state will give me a zero in this kind of system. And let me show it here. So zero energy states are relatively easy to find in this kind of Hamiltonian. I know that if I do this or do that, then I can get a zero if this function is annihilated by A, so A phi naught is zero, or this function, A phi plus, is zero. And they are actually related, so I only care about one of these equations. So I reduce the dimension of the problem. Now all I have to figure out is what kind of wave function is annihilated by this this function. And so let's forget the other one. So what I want is some sort of an ansatz. So I want my psi k to be some zero phi, which would be a function of y, and with parameter k, such that it's annihilated. And I choose the following ansatz. I just choose it to be z to the n. So far I didn't even introduce the boundary conditions, but I just took an ansatz that is slightly more general than e to the I k x. So I took z to the n. So it could be a plane wave, or it could be something else. It could be a decaying exponent, whatever. All depends on this z. So, and if I put this ansatz here, what I find is that instead of r, so let's just do it slowly, to the n is equal 0. So our dagger, what our dagger does is takes z to the n and into z to the n plus 1. So I can just put it like that, z plus 2 cosine kx over 2 is 0. Yeah. So basically, I already know that z is minus 2 cosine kx over 2. So did I find an edge state? Is that enough? So what I found here is a solution. And actually, since I did not impose boundary conditions yet, you can put anything you want for z and ask whether it is a solution or not. And whether it's a solution or not, that is at zero energy, because this condition I did put, depends on the shape of this z. So if I want a plane wave, I need z that is, its amplitude is 1. And this actually happens at a certain point where the cosine is half, right? I'll get to 1. So I have points where z is 1, but this is an extended state. So when z is 1, so z in amplitude, I get an extended state. But if z is less than 1, this is the state that I actually want. But I already know when z is going to be less than 1, when this cosine is less than half. So if you work it out, you see that this actually happens between, I think, pi over 3 and 2 pi over 3. And what it tells me is I have to redraw the Brillouin zone, but now I have a one-dimensional Brillouin zone. And let's say before I had a dispersion like that, and I have all of the extended waves everywhere here, and this is k and k prime. Actually, what I find is that in between the two valleys, I have a flat band of edge states. So I have a huge degeneracy of states with energy equals 0 right between the two Dirac points. And not outside, because this condition is not satisfied. So z is more than 1 outside. I also want to say that I cheated a little bit, because I looked only one type of the supersymmetric. So I had the other condition. And it turns out that you actually switch between being in one of them to being in the other one. No, actually, that's not true. Sorry. Yeah, actually, there are two kinds of solutions. And either in between, either you get that z is less than 1, or that 1 over z is less than 1. And when 1 over z is less than 1, it's actually a solution of the other type of equation. So you have actually two types of edge states that decay away from the bulk. And if you took z more than 1 and you're in a strip geometry, say that I have another edge here, I'll have states that are either localized to this edge or localized to this edge, depending on the magnitude of z. But what really sets what? Yeah, sorry. Oh, sorry. This is momentum space. So this is energy versus kx. These are the Dirac cones that we have. That we had before with the raccoons. And I have energy equals 0 states in between the raccoons. Is that more obvious now or not?
I mean, why do you think this?
Because I was looking for states which have zero energy. That's why I only had to find a function that's annihilated by this entry, right? I didn't have to solve the whole Hamiltonian. Just one entry needs to annihilate my function, and I knew that my answer was something like that. Okay?
Suppose z is less than 1.
So z is less than 1 in between these two points.
But where's the actual boundary, like up top when you draw that to left?
There's actually no boundary in the real world. I have bands, and at some point the bands bend, and my Dirac model is not that good of an approximation anymore. So that's usually where I draw it. But basically, I have a spectrum that just curves somewhere. So yeah. So in this picture, I have no boundary. I just have, you know, my usual Dirac spectrum, but it's just projected onto the kx. Yeah.
I'm probably missing something, but isn't your, when you choose that ansatz, isn't hk always zero, no matter what your...
Isn't what always zero?
If you have, so say for example you take your zero and z to the n, right?
Yeah.
And this matrix here will invert those two entries.
Right.
And the transpose of psi k acting on that will always kill it, no matter what your form. Maybe I'm missing something.
Okay. This form makes sure that my wave function is annihilated if this equation is satisfied. Or, in other words, if... yeah, if this function is annihilated, yeah. So I have z, okay, let me take a step back. For any k that I choose, any kx, I can satisfy this equation, right? I know which z to take, minus 2 post kx over 2, right? For any kx, I can satisfy this equation. The question is, can I also satisfy this boundary condition? So the way I set it up, this will give me zero if z is equal to minus 2 cos kx over 2. You see? So give me a kx. I can give you a state that gives zero energy. But now the question is it physical or not? So in order to be physical, it has to decay away from the edge. And that's not always guaranteed. That's depending on my solution. And therefore, I can only solve it here. And there are two kinds of solutions. So there is a solution where the A sublattice is populated, and the B sublattice is not populated. And there's the other kind where the B sublattice is not populated, is populated. But actually, the boundary condition also chooses between these two kinds of states. Because if this is where it terminates, and I choose that this will be zero here, then basically I will get zeros all around, because there would be nothing to propagate. Let me just maybe make that a little more clear. Let's say that my wave function is giving a non-zero amplitude everywhere here. That is the same amplitude, except it has a phase 1, minus 1, 1, minus 1. Right? And this state is actually at pi, at kx equals pi, which is in the middle. And this state is actually the highest, the most highly localized state. Actually, if you look at that state, you'll see that no other atoms are populated with electrons. So it's really only localized to this state. So how to see that? I can think again about my tight binding that I had before. So I know that T times the CI dagger CJ is equal zero. So basically, if I look, because my energy is zero, right? So if I look at the atom here, I have to say that hopping for to all of the other sites should sum up to zero. That's just coming out of my Hamiltonian. But if I start from a full state here, and I have nothing here because I cut my sample, I know that hopping to these two have to be zero. And actually, you'll find that all of these cancel, and you'll have nothing here, you have nothing here, and so on. This is just the most localized state. You can solve it for a particular k and see it. Yeah.
What Shane said is like, but didn't this equation that like we got the condition that z is minus cosine, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
Did that come from that like we required hk to be zero?
Yeah.
But hk for this form of matrix is identically zero. Like if we have psi k is like zero and something.
Yeah.
But then.
So I'm saying that for any k. If you choose this particular wave function, you get zero. H is not zero for any wave function.
But it's your ansatz, it's the zero in the top part of your wave function. You've got zero,
right.
Then z to the n, right? It's the fact that there's a zero there that causes it to be zero, it's not the fact you have a z to the n.
Saying that this is always zero?
On the left, you now have another thing to, another, you have the Hermitian conjugate of your wave function, right?
Yeah.
So if you put that in, then it's always zero, because you've got a zero at the top. So when you take the Hermitian conjugate, you've got the corresponding zero on the left of that matrix. Because you have zero in your diagonal components, right?
So, okay. So we're confusing here two notations. When I write this, I don't mean a wave function here. I mean operators. I mean that this is actually not a wave function. It's an operator, and it has C, D, and it creates an electron. When I wrote it this way, I already took the ansatz into account, and I already assumed a particular form of wave function. This is second quantization notation, just tells you where to create an electron. But I already assumed that I have a wave function, and I'm applying the Hamiltonian to the wave function. So I'm not looking at sandwiching the Hamiltonian and all of that.
We should use phi instead of sine.
I should have called it something else. It's just like saying I have h, and some other wave function equals zero. You don't put another one here, right? I want to say that this is an eigenstate, and I'm looking for the zeroth energy eigenstate. This is maybe a little switch that one should get used to, but it's really, if you want to write it this way, then you still have operators. You have second quantization, but I already assumed that I have single particle wave function and that it's acting on my system and so on. Thank you for this reward. So I think I'm slightly over time already. I'll have a few more remarks on this, but just let me say one thing. Having a flat band is really unique. You don't get it very often. This is a huge degeneracy. And this degeneracy is actually a third of all of the states you have in KX. And they're all degenerate at zero energy, which makes them very susceptible to interactions. Whenever you have quenched kinetic energy, interaction becomes very important no matter how weak it is. So we're going to talk about this a little bit next time. But basically this will carry on also to the quantum Hall effect where you have quenched kinetic energy. Any more questions?
Yeah, just to clarify, can you explain, so you have HK equals like psi dagger matrix psi. Can you just explain that notation?
Yeah.
Thanks.
So basically, all I want to say is this, this, right? The notation here comes from having operators already. But as soon as I diagonalize the single particle, all I have is a wave function. I have what is the amplitude of my wave function at each point. So I'm assuming already that I have a single particle wave function, and that my particle is somehow distributed over the lattice, and I'm describing it by this vector of amplitudes, not vectors of wave of creation and annihilation. We can discuss it more afterwards, because I think the other classes are about the